This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
George W. Bush's re-election campaign moved deeper into its election playbook yesterday and launched a hollow defense of his economic record in Ohio ahead of a visit by his likely opponent, Senator John F. Kerry. The decision reflects the Bush administration's growing concern about Ohio, a state he won by 4 percentage points in 2000, but is among the hardest hit by job losses. The move is the latest of near-daily signs that Bush's campaign is engaging Kerry as if he were the Democratic nominee. Labor Department figures show that in 2003, Ohio is second only to another swing state, Michigan, in the number of jobs lost. In January, Michigan was first, and Ohio second in the number of jobs lost in the previous month. The award of a major contract to equip the new Iraqi army has triggered an uproar in staunch U.S. allies Poland and Spain, where officials are questioning why their nation's experienced arms firms lost out to an American company with little history in such projects. The $327 million contract to supply everything from canteens to AK-47s was awarded in January to Noor USA, a Virginia-based company whose president is A. Huda Faruqi. Faruqi is a close friend of Ahmed Shabli, a controversial member of the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council who has close ties with some Pentagon officials and is considered a criminal in other countries. The winning bid was so much lower than those by the Polish and Spanish firms that officials from the two nations have questioned Noor USA's ability to even make good on the contract. Federal officials have discussed bringing in U.S. troops to boost security at this summer's Republican National Convention, but the NYPD doesn't think it needs them. The number of troops mentioned during the briefing was in the thousands, and the NYPD may get some form of federal assistance, whether they want it or not, sources said. With a convention labeled a national special security event, the Secret Service is the lead federal coordinating agency. The aim is to handle potential protesters while keeping the city running like normal, several officials said. More after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
Three classes at Iowa State University, two of them in the past 2 weeks, have been interrupted by a man who flashed students and then ran. A man wearing nothing but a trench coat, a Richard Nixon mask, and tennis shoes entered a class auditorium Friday just as a meteorology exam began, said freshman Eric Triggs. The man opened his trench coat, danced around, and ran from one door to another while yelling, Triggs said. If arrested, the man could be charged with indecent exposure and disorderly conduct, local authorities said. For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Let us be dissatisfied, said Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., until the dark yesterdays of segregated schools will be transformed into bright tomorrows of quality integrated education. Thanks to the broad civil rights movement and the prevailing goodwill of the American people, our country strived for years to reach that bright tomorrow. And while we never quite got there, we made great strides, and at least we were trying as a nation. But then, stuff happened. In the name of cutting excessive government spending, budgets for public education began to be slashed by opportunistic politicians at all levels. Through their short-sightedness, our once proud public school system is being reduced to shambles. School buildings themselves are in dangerous states of deterioration. Classrooms are so jammed that many are little more than warehouses. Basic teaching equipment and supplies are unavailable. Teachers are now being forced to instruct students on how to pass a standardized test rather than teaching cognitive skills. And the idea of quality education for all has been made to take a backseat to tax cut for corporations and the wealthy. As for integrated education, the picture is even more dismal, as legislative bodies and courts have cynically abandoned our national striving for that still worthy goal. A new national study by Harvard University researchers finds that America's schools today are practically as segregated as they were when Dr. King was assassinated in 1968. In the late 1980s, public policy abandoned King's vision, halting our decades-long commitment to integration. As a result, the trend has rapidly reversed, and most white students now have little contact with black and Latino students. In southern states, 70% of black students are now in predominantly black schools. In western states, some 80% of Latino students are in predominantly minority schools, twice as many as in 1968. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's time for all of us to be dissatisfied again.
I have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
When you're swallowing all life's lies,
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Good evening, truth seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. Program produced, as always, by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman is our announcer. The phone number here, 800-TALK-YES, 800-825-5937. Or, if you like to email during the program, mikedmalloy@earthlink.net. It's Wednesday, Truth Seekers. We have a lot of sound for you tonight. Too stupid to be president, backing down from his own White House job creation predictions. You got to hear this. Simple Scotty McClellan being hammered on this issue. And, of course, Howard Dean's words of advice to Democratic voters as he bows out of the presidential race. Keep it tuned all 3 hours tonight if you can possibly stand it. A couple of emails first, a couple little light items, and then on to the red meat. This is from Curtis. Mike, I was driving home with my 7-year-old son tonight. This is from last night. And he was asking me some tough questions about the war on Iraq and the commander in chief, W. I was listing all the reasons he attacked Iraq and saw and how none of them, except for Saddam being a brutal dictator, were true. My son then said, well, I saw on the Bush Channel a story about Iraq. I stopped him and asked him what he meant by the Bush Channel. He said, you know, Fox News. I nearly wrecked the car laughing about his ability at such a young age to see so much. He then went on to say that Bush should stop killing people around the world. He said the army should stop listening to him. I tried my best to explain that the soldiers had to obey their orders and can't be blamed for being sent so far away from their loved ones. Could it be that my 7-year-old son is more compassionate than the compassionate conservative? I would think so, Curtis. In addition, I think your son is much more intelligent than Bush. This is from Craig. Mike, wanted to tell you I love your show. I stumbled on it, ironically, about 10 years ago while I was serving as a Mormon missionary in Charlotte, North Carolina. The Atlanta station you worked on carried that far north. I always enjoyed listening to the program when I could tune in. So here I am, 10 years later. I just signed up for Sirius Radio and was overly delighted to discover that you're being carried on Channel 145. I've been listening faithfully ever since. The irony is that things have changed for me 10 years later. I'm only laughing because he says slightly changed. Well, whatever. I have gone from a conservative Republican Mormon to slightly more liberal. Additionally, I'm a gay man now living in Las Vegas. Good. That's slight, Craig. Your point last night on gay marriage and whether or not being gay is a choice rang so true. I wish more of my friends and family could or would listen to your viewpoints. Perhaps they might have an easier time empathizing and understanding the difficulty that those like me have with coming to terms with their sexuality. It's taken me 7 years to come to grips with it, but I am now a happy, well-adjusted professional engaged in a long-term relationship. I hope to someday be able to share that relationship in a legal ceremony and then enjoy all the benefits afforded to other legally married couples. Sincerely, Craig. I've often wondered, and I guess Craig's letter piqued the question in me again. How do people who have a genuine belief in their Christian faith, whether it's Mormonism or Methodism or Baptism or Catholicism, whatever it is, how do Mormons in this instance, how do Catholics in another instance, how do Baptists in another, how do Christian people who discover their homosexuality and decide that they cannot deny who they are, how do they continue to practice within that religion, knowing that the religion condemns them, that there is nothing they can do short of, I guess, living a celibate life? I don't know if it's the gayness that's condemned or the sexual nature of homosexuality that so offends these right-wing religious freaks. I've never been able to understand that. That's why I don't understand log cabin Republicans. You know, here are homosexual men and women who back Republicans who, in fact, would cut their throats given a chance. They'll take the gay Republicans' money. They'll take their efforts to register other Republicans. They'll take their votes. But in a dark alley on a moonless night, any Republican religious freak would hammer the bejesus into or out of any gay person. I've never been able to understand that. I can't quite get my mind around that. How someone who insists on being a Christian can also acknowledge their own homosexuality if that's their orientation. I don't get it. And Laura Picklesbush is getting involved in it now, too. I can't help but wonder how Dick Cheney's daughter, what's your name, the lesbian daughter, how does Dick Cheney's daughter breathe in a crowd like this? Homophobic bastards, including her own father, he's on the record of saying, I don't take any. How do they do it? How does Dick Cheney's lesbian daughter, how does Phyllis Schlafly, Eagle Forum, her gay son, how does Newt Gingrich's lesbian sister, how do these people manage to maintain family ties knowing that their relatives, their parents, their siblings will publicly condemn them? How does that work? How does that work? Dick Gephardt's a lesbian daughter, she is embraced by the family. You know, he on his campaign, he said, yeah, this is my daughter happens to be a lesbian, but she's going to work on the campaign. How do right-wingers do it? How do you all condemn your own children? Damn you. Damn you for that. You know, really. Really. So Pickles is out there on a fundraiser. A 3-day trip. To raise money for her husband's campaign. And Rove has her doing the same thing that her stupid husband is doing. She's out, well, I'm really talking about education. That's why, see, I talk about education, and then the taxpayer has to pay for the trip. But, of course, I'm out here to raise more millions of dollars for my husband, Georgie, because, you know, he just needs money to defeat the communist liberal gay people in this country, you know. So, you know, Laura is a hypocrite just like her husband, just like every single Republican in this country. Absolute hypocrite. There she is, giving her little pissant talks about education while her husband is slashing funds for education and libraries and after-school programs. But there's Laura. There's Pickles out there. Yeah, my husband, Georgie. So in the course of one of these, she says that she thinks, as if anybody gave a damn. I mean, here's a woman who can't control her own daughters. But she thinks gay marriages are, quote, a very, very shocking issue. Ask how she, for some people, don't take it out of context, Mike. What she said was, gay marriages are, quote, a very, very shocking issue for some people, end quote. Now, ask how she feels about the issue personally. Mrs. Bush replied, let's just leave it at that. What are you going to do, sweetheart, when Jenna turns out to be a lesbian, when Barbara turns out to be a homosexual? What are you going to do? What are you going to do if one of those kids finally come out and say, "Yeah, Mom, listen, I hate to tell you this, but you know, I've been listening to the Indigo Girls ever since I was 7 years old, and Mom, oh." You know what I mean? So there's Pickles ripping off the public, as every member of the Bush crime family does. Every single member. And there's Pickles out there talking about, well, I think it's, you know, it's just very, very shocking to some people. Too stupid to be president himself said today he's troubled. He's troubled by gay weddings in San Francisco. Troubled. Are you troubled about the 540 Americans you've sent to their deaths, Mr. Bush? You don't seem to be. You seem to be very comfortable with that. Are you troubled about the 10 to 15,000 Iraqi civilians you've blown into blood and gore, brain tissue and broken bones all around that country? Are you, Mr. Bush? No, you're troubled by the gay marriages, the gay weddings in San Francisco. Uh-huh. Now, he declined, this was during the Q&A with the Tunisian president today. Bush declined to say whether or not he was more inclined now to back a constitutional ban on gay marriages. That's because Rove hasn't told him what to say yet. They haven't decided yet. They still have their middle finger in the wind, all wet, testing to see which way the wind is blowing. What did you think I meant? So Rove hasn't decided yet. Rove hasn't decided whether or not to stick his finger in the eye of the religious conservatives or to go ahead and do for them what Monica did for Bill Clinton, and that is to have Bush come out and say, yes, I'm in favor of constitutional amendment, because queers are queer. Mr. Bush spoke privately, though, with conservative Catholics about this issue. Now, that's a good group to discuss it with. Why not discuss it with liberal homosexuals, George? Why conservative Catholics? Jesus. And other people who favor the ban, and the word was, the skinny was, the president will soon announce his support for a constitutional amendment. You know, Bush keeps saying, I've consistently stated that I'll support law to protect marriage between a man and a woman. Not a man and a man. It's not Adam and Steve. It's Adam and whatever. White House spokes geek Scott McClellan said that Bush recognizes that gay marriage is a divisive topic. No, it's not. It is not even a topic, Scott. It's only becomes one when you and your slimy Republican ilk and these religious knuckleheads make it a topic that is divisive. It is not. It is people. It's a topic regarding people wanting to commit in a long-term relationship. It's called marriage, you moron. Oh, God. Anyway, Bush met with 13 Roman Catholic conservatives. Dean Hudson, the publisher of Crisis Magazine and a friend of Karl Rove. William Donahue, president of the Catholic League. Wall Street Journal columnist Peggy Noonan, former speechwriter for President Reagan. Catherine Lopez, associate editor of National Review. Yeah, just the very people you want to discuss the issue of gay marriage with, right?
The cops, chalked and marked the outline where the boy first dropped. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Bruce Willis was in Iraq. Did you hear about this? He went to Telefar, I believe is the way you pronounce it. He has a band, Accelerator, played some rock and roll, and, you know, there were hundreds of U.S. soldiers there. Anyway, after he did his rock and roll, he took the microphone. He said, we're here to support you, and that's fine. Okay. But then he offered the soldiers listening $1 million out of his own pocket for the capture of Saddam Hussein. And then he said, and if you catch him, just give me 4 seconds with him. Isn't he just a man's man? Huh?
Who are you then? Just another American who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo.
He's always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
Truth
justice, and the American way with Mike Malloy. Where else?
Twenty-four past the hour. You know, I was just listening to that promo for our program, Bruce Willis talking to the troops. I wonder, did he ever pay the $1 million to the American soldiers who found, quote, Saddam Hussein? I bet he didn't. I bet he didn't. Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee, called in with a reminder. Tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 35 minutes, Cinemax West, if you get that cable channel, Cinemax West is going to air a film about the author of Fortunate Son, Steve Hatfield. The movie is titled Horns and Halos. There was a review about it in, where was it? I read it earlier today. But anyway, if you have Cinemax West, tune in at 10 o'clock. It's okay. I don't mind if you, you know, leave your computer and go watch television. Or tape it. Kathy shrieks at me. You can tape it 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Eastern Time. Cinemax West, the movie about Steve Hatfield. The movie is titled Horns and Halos. Howard Dean at a press conference today.
I am no longer actively pursuing the presidency. We will, however, continue to build a new organization using our enormous grassroots network to continue the effort to transform the Democratic Party and to change our country.
He then went on to ask his supporters to back the Democratic candidate, whomever that turns out to be.
I will not run as an independent or third-party candidate. And I urge my supporters not to be tempted to support any effort by another candidate. The bottom line is that we must beat George W. Bush in November, whatever it takes. I will support the nominee of our party. I will do everything I can to beat George W. Bush. I urge you to do the same.
You know, I'm trying to figure out what happened to the Dean campaign. And I also can't figure out why he's bailing out. He's second in terms of convention delegates right now. Second behind Kerry. He's not third, fourth, fifth. He's second. Dean said his name will remain on the ballots in the upcoming state contest, but he made it clear that as you heard, he's no longer a candidate. And he went on to urge his supporters to stay active in the primaries. He didn't say how. Stay active in getting out the vote for him or bailing out and going to work for another candidate. Now, William Grider, who writes for The Nation, writes for Rolling Stone, from the issue of The Nation coming out March 8th, I'm on their editorial advance list. Maybe you are too. Hell, I don't know. But they sent me this day. The Nation sent me this day. William Grider's article, Why Dean Failed. And just a couple of lines here. In 40 years of observing presidential contests, I cannot remember another major candidate brutalized so intensely by the media, with the possible exception of George Wallace. Howard Dean contributed some fatal errors of his own, to be sure, but he also brought fresh air and new ideas, a crisp call to revitalize the Democratic Party, and at least the outlines of deeper political and economic reforms. The reporters, a surrogate agents for Washington's insider sensibilities, blew him off. Dean's big mistake was in not recognizing up front that the media are very much part of the existing order and were bound to be hostile to his provocative kind of politics.
I'm starting to get old. Feels like I'm starting all over again. The last 3 years were just pretend. And I said goodbye to you. Goodbye to everything that I knew. You were the one I loved.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse-click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
Two environmental filmmakers strive to be fair, but objectivity is in the eye of the beholder. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Larry Hott and Diane Gary have been telling environmental stories through sound and pictures for 25 years. Hott says the documentary movie-making process constantly poses ethical choices.
There's a lot of rule bending that you can do when you make a film. You're starting with a selection process right from the beginning. What statements are going to go in? Who's going to end up on the editing room floor? What images are you going to use to illustrate your point of view? You can easily show, for example, a clear-cut forest, and on the screen, all you see is stumps. But you can leave out the perfectly beautifully managed forest on the edge of the screen.
Diane Gary says it takes conscious effort to keep a film from becoming one-sided.
One thing I think that we've done, and I would encourage anybody in the film world to do, is to not make anybody look like an idiot. If you film pro-timber harvest and anti-timber harvest people, try to make them look like equal adversaries. Then people can decide for themselves. I don't think we really convert anybody from one position to another, but I do think we add to the debate in an intelligent way.
Hott and Gary agree that a filmmaker is always choosing between what he or she wants to say and wants to leave out. Larry Hott.
People have this impression that because it's documentary, it's true. But it's as true as any story anybody has ever told anybody else. It's point of view and what you choose to keep in, what you choose to keep out. In the end, it's a matter of opinion.
Hott and Gary say there are always multiple points of view to any story, including their own. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of you may be alarmed by subversive propaganda spread by that liberal media filter, Mike Malloy, who distorts the truth every weeknight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Rest assured, our sources at Fox News confirm that we have a fabulous, booming economy and enjoy daily glorious victories in the numerous fronts of the ongoing terror wars. And besides, any problems we're experiencing are all Clinton's fault. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
27 before the hour. Oh, my goodness. Look who's here. Carl Childers, Slingblade. Carl, welcome to the program.
Hi, Malloy.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I don't know. I got some bone to pick with you pretty quick here.
Oh, what I do? Whatever it is, I'm sorry.
On Saturday I come home and give my special lady a turkey.
A turkey?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She had a hell of a time finding a vase big enough to put it in.
No, it was Valentine's Day, Carl. I kept saying Thanksgiving. You didn't take me literally.
I found that out, you know. Needless to say, I were the one that got the stuff, not the turkey.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well, I didn't call to talk turkey today, though.
Oh, good.
You know, I got some stuff about the campaign and mine and about Howard's End. You know, everybody's saying that when Dean said that he was going to challenge the media, that's when it started to come down.
That's right.
But you remember on December 19th, which is when I asked the question, how did Dean Childers 2004 sound?
Yeah.
It's apparent they were afraid of me.
Yeah.
Thought they could get rid of me by getting rid of him.
Is that what happened?
I think so.
So in order to prevent Dean from tapping you to be vice president, they've destroyed Dean.
They're mighty wrong, though.
They are?
I'm out campaigning still. I got a new campaign I want to tell you about, my Rock the Vote campaign.
Rock the Vote?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I'm ready to go out and do some night campaigning in a bit.
Oh, God.
I figure most people can throw away the propaganda they get in the mail.
Yeah.
They could change the channel on that idiot box, or yeah, they could turn the page in their local fish wrap.
Yeah.
But they can't ignore my Rock the Vote message.
Uh-oh, I think I know what you're going to say.
I got the idea from Ernest T. Bass, and it's pretty simple, really.
Uh-oh. And what's your Rock the Vote idea?
Yeah, I'm a simple man with a simple plan.
Yes, sir.
See, I tie a message to a rock, and I hurl it through the windows while the electorate is sleeping.
Oh, God.
You know, the message says something like, Carl Childers 2004, or you went crazy, vote Carl Childers, or maybe something like, you think you got it bad now, wait till Carl finds out you didn't vote for him.
Oh, Lord. I'll bet that'll be highly effective.
Oh, it'll be very effective campaigning. Give me some of my exposure I need. You know, it's cheap, and it will leave an impression on the voter. What do you think?
What do I think? I'm glad that you live somewhere not near me, Carl. No offense, sir, but I would hate to hear the tinkle of glass in the middle of the night. That would be very I'd be very disturbing. I'd have to reach for my gun.
I don't know. You know, you talk about it a lot. If you need anybody's head pinched off, you know, you just give me a call.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, Carl, listen, always good to hear from you. You're going to start your Rock the Vote this evening?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you are.
I want to tell you something real quick about Fox. You know, fair and balanced.
Yeah.
Life ain't fair, and I ain't balanced.
That's very I understand.
So hop on board the crazy train there, folks.
Yes, sir.
I'll talk to you again soon, my lord.
Oh, thank you, Carl.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, God. Sling Blade, Rock the Vote. Whew. The man makes me nervous, Kathy. Even on the phone, you know, or in the headphones here. The man makes me nervous. Lord. Okay. Calm down a bit here. If I may, quote, I'll vote for him. I'll vote for him in a New York minute. If he gets on the ballot here in Georgia, he has my vote. There ain't no question, Carl, if you're still listening. If you haven't walked out the door yet, you're on the Georgia ballot, dude. You got my vote. Write that down, Carl. Memorize that. Mike Malloy will vote for me. Thank you. Now back to William Grider. From the upcoming issue of The Nation, May 8th issue, why Howard Dean failed, he also says, for the record, reporters and editors deny that they, what he says is deny that this occurred, this being the media bringing Howard Dean down. Grider writes, privately, they chortle over their accomplishment. At the Washington airport, I ran into a bunch of them, including some old friends from long ago campaigns, on their way to the next contest after Iowa. So I remarked, hey, you guys saved the Republic from the doctor, didn't you? Yes, they assented with giggly pleasure. Dean was finished. Though one news magazine correspondent confided the coverage would become more balanced once they went after Senator Kerry. Only Paul Begala of CNN demurred. I don't know what you're talking about, Begala said, blank-faced. Nobody here but us gunslingers. The party establishment, limp as it is, was correct to target Dean with tribal vengeance. From their narrow perspective, he represented a political antichrist. The unvarnished way he talked, the glint of unfamiliar breakthrough ideas in his speeches, his lack of customary deference to party elders. What the insiders loathed are the same qualities that many of us found exhilarating. I already feel nostalgic for his distinctive one-liners, like, too many of our leaders have made a devil's bargain with corporate and wealthy interests, saying, I'll keep you in power if you keep me in power. And as long as half the world's population subsists on less than $2 a day, the U.S. will not be secure. A world populated by hostile have-nots is not one in which U.S. leadership can be sustained without coercion. And over the last 30 years, we have allowed multinational corporations and other special interests to use our nation's government to undermine our nation's promise. And there's something about human beings that corporations can't deal with, and that's our soul, our spirituality, who we are. We need to find a way in this country to understand and to help each other understand that there is a tremendous price to be paid for the supposed efficiency of big corporations. The price is losing the sense of who we are as human beings. And finally, in our nation, the people are sovereign, not the government. It is the people, not the media, or the financial system, or mega corporations, or the two political powers, or parties, who have the power to create change. Do you not remember those remarks? So, you know, I was talking about this with a friend today, and my friend, who's a carry backer, said, well, you know, what's your problem? Your guy is still in. Dennis Kucinich hasn't bailed out. Don't you feel good about Howard Dean being out of it now? Doesn't that kind of clear the way for your guy, Dennis? And my answer, of course, was hell no. You know, to see, of course I want to see Dennis. I'd like to see Dennis Kucinich as the next president of the United States. There is no question, no qualifiers, nothing. He is capable. He has the moral qualities necessary. He's got the leadership qualities, yada, yada, yada. I've said it as many times as I feel have felt necessary on this program. But Howard Dean bailing out, Howard Dean not winning a single primary, to me, I don't know. It's saying something. I'm not sure what it's saying, but it's leaving me uncomfortable, disconcerted, off topic, a little anxious. I'm not exactly sure. I watched when Howard Dean came in second and gave his raucous speech to the faithful in in Iowa? The Iowa caucuses, where he's on to California, and I watched his face. And I watched Senator Harkin's face behind Dean and all the people on that stage laughing and hooting and hollering. And then I was dumbfounded, absolutely dumbfounded, when every single media outlet in the country painted that as rage and anger. And I thought to myself, has it finally happened to me? Have I finally turned a corner mentally where I can witness something with my own eyes and see joyful exuberance just boiling out of somebody and not understand it's not joyful exuberance, that it is in fact rage? And then I thought to myself, no, I've worked in media, I've worked in television and radio, I know how this game works. The sons of bitches are turning this totally around and selling the American people on the idea that Howard Dean, and what was the phrase that this pig Morton Kondracki came up, Deaniacs? Like maniacs? Dennis Kucinich is the man I will vote for, and I feel like hell tonight that Howard Dean has dropped out. If Howard Dean would have been the eventual nominee, not only would he have gotten my vote and a check for $100 or $200, whatever I could afford at the time, because I will be unemployed probably when he's going to need the money, but I would have gone door to door, I would have handed out literature, I would have gotten people to the polls to vote for Howard Dean, and he's bailed out. And I'm not saying anything there other than acknowledging the fact that he has bailed out. This is America. If you don't have money, if you don't have organization, you don't have anything. If you're in the political realm. But I can't understand. Maybe somebody can say something tonight as to why Howard Dean did not win a single primary. What happened? Does anybody know? I mean, a grassroots organization that bubbled from the ground up, not the top down, something that, the Naderites should take a look at. You know, you don't. You've got to have the grassroots organization, and it appeared that Howard Dean did. What happened? Was that support a million miles wide and a centimeter deep? Is that all it was? Or were those supporters of Howard Dean driven away from their own man by the media onslaught against him? What happened? Does anybody know? I want to talk about this for a while. I don't want to talk about anything else. This is disturbing to me. It really is. If you have a different topic, I see a couple people do. I'm going to move you to the back of the line. You're just going to have to hold on, maybe for an hour. Because I want to know what happened to Howard Dean. If you're a Dean backer, what happened? Just tell me what happened. Tell the people who listen to this program, what happened? Why didn't Howard Dean win a primary? Why didn't he win a caucus? Of course the media went after him. The media are a pack of rabid dogs. They will bring anybody down. They will chew anybody's throat out. They will attack anybody that they think they can attack. That's a given. But what happened to the Dean's support? What happened? Or was it never really there to begin with? What is it? Does anybody know? Does anybody know? Does anybody know? Maybe Lawrence does. Lawrence is calling from Arlington, Virginia. What do you say, Lawrence?
On December 3rd, on Hardball, Howard Dean said that he was going to break up the Media Corps. He was going to do a Teddy Roosevelt trust buster thing against the Fox Media Corp, the AOL, Time Warner, CNN Media Corp. He was going to break them all up. At that point, all of a sudden, if you watch the standard reporting, the words unelectability started appearing against him. The entire Democratic Central Committee, the DLC, and all that moved against him dramatically because he was going off the reservation, and he'd been successful by doing what Gene McCarthy did in 68. But this time he had the Internet and kids sending $80 a piece to come up with, what, $30 million? So he had the ideas, and he was going against. And December 3rd, check out Hardball's transcripts.
Okay, well, I'm aware of that.
And all the Media Corps turned on him.
Right. I understand, Lawrence. I'm aware of that. We've talked about that. Are you saying, then, that his supporters were spineless, had no backbone, said, oh, my God, the media is against him, so I'm going to pull my support? Is that what you're saying? He didn't win a single primary. Why not?
No, but he didn't have any. He didn't against. I don't know why he didn't do better than he did in Iowa.
All right,
I don't know why.
Then you and I are exactly on the same page. I can't give you an answer. You can't give me one. Here's what I do know. Going into to these primaries and poll and caucuses, Howard Dean had a commanding lead. Every place I looked, it was Dean. And then when the votes actually occurred, no support. What happened?
All I can say is that the machine geared up and crushed him at the last minute. That's all I can say. I don't know what's going on. I feel like Gebhardt. Something happened. Like Gebhardt should have done a lot better than I with, you know, 18 years in and next.
Well, I don't think Gebhardt. I think Gebhardt did as good as he could. Gebhardt is from a different century. Gebhardt is just he's just not presidential. He just didn't have it.
But Dean scared the establishment. Dean went off the reservation.
Okay,
Dean said the unspeakable things.
All right. I understand, Lawrence. Thank you, Lawrence. I appreciate you checking in. I understand all that, and I don't disagree with it. But that shouldn't have had any effect on the Dean supporters. In fact, I would think it would have galvanized the Dean supporters. Like, oh, Hardball doesn't like us? Oh, O'Reilly Factor doesn't like us? Oh, the DLC doesn't like us? Well, then, by God, we're going to work 10 times as hard. I mean, right? Albert's calling from Augusta, Georgia. What do you say, Albert?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine. Listen, I'm going to say this to you, and I mean this. And, you know, I'm a Dean supporter,
Hey, can I get you to hold on?
Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't hear the music. We got to take a quick break. We'll come right back to you, Albert. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Oh, everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful.
Everything I know about my country, I learned on TV. The man on the screen tells me who is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car and my gun. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see all around the world, every night and day, on my TV.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heaping helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, yum, one, two, four, and you.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Holden Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, there. This is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, right? Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Ow.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Animal?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Talk radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour. 800-TALK-YES is the number. We are talking with Albert in Augusta, Georgia. Albert, go ahead. Thanks for holding on.
One thing before I get into the whole Dean thing, here at Augusta Chronicle, they're saying that Roy Barnes' flag just may make it on the second, so let's hope it does. Second thing, let me tell you something, man. It's like this. I saw Howard Dean resign today from the presidential campaign. It kind of bothered me to an extent, but I saw it coming. But one thing I will say that is this, and that is, you know what, and I explained to your wife when I called him the first time, that is, if I was John Kerry,
mm-hmm.
and if I had enough sense to know not to alienate a grassroots campaign such as Howard Dean, which would probably go to someone like Nader, whatever the case might be, he may want to make Howard Dean the Democratic chairman and put it up for vote. Because, for one, I don't like Terry McAuliffe.
Right.
Terry McAuliffe and his cronies basically destroyed Howard Dean, just like they did McCarthy back in 68.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that, you know, when it all comes down to it, and the way that I see it, remember I told you like a year ago, I never forget it, I said that it was going to be a Kerry-Edwards ticket and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I see it happening. But I do not like the way that the Democrats had destroyed Howard Dean the way that they did. They put a fire in the ass of the Democratic National Committee as far as debating George Bush on the war. In 2002, when they allowed Saxby Chambliss here
right.
in Georgia
right.
to talk about a triple amputee, that he was connected to Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden,
mm-hmm.
that angered me. And that, and as I told you before when I first called you a couple of years ago, that I was a Republican, and it angered me because I'm thinking that I have an uncle buried at Arlington Cemetery right now
mm-hmm.
who went to Vietnam, Okinawa, and the Korean War, and who was also a POW three times, Purple Heart, Congressional Medal of Honor, buried right along 95 where the Pentagon got hit.
Mm-hmm.
To me, and the way that I see the Republicans doing their thing down south, it bothers me. And I tell anybody that right now, the way that I see it, and that is this, I don't care for Kerry, I don't care for Edwards a whole lot. And I love Dean, and I love Kucinich. But if you cannot, and if you cannot get their campaigns up the way that it should be as far as, I guess, as far as the support and all that other kind of stuff, like Dean said today, don't go to a third
party. Right, right.
You know, don't go to, anybody else who wants to destroy the Democratic Party as far as giving Bush the leeway like in Florida.
Right.
What I would say is this, and this is coming straight from my heart. I didn't want to call, but I had to.
All right, listen, I'm going to have to put you on hold and let you say it when we come back, Al, because we got to take a quick break here. Y'all stay with us. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2004.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy.
And you hate me?
True.
You
why,
hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. The award of a major contract to equip the new Iraqi army has triggered an uproar in staunch U.S. allies Poland and Spain, where officials are questioning why their nation's experienced arms firms lost out to an American company with little history in such projects. The $327 million contract to supply everything from canteens to AK-47s was awarded in January to Noor USA, a Virginia-based company whose president is a Huda Faruqi. Faruqi is a close friend of Ahmed Shabli, a controversial member of the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council who has close ties with some Pentagon officials and is considered a criminal in other countries. The winning bid was so much lower than those by the Polish and Spanish firms that officials from the two nations have questioned Noor USA's ability to even make good on the contract. Federal officials have discussed bringing in U.S. troops to boost security at this summer's Republican National Convention, but the NYPD doesn't think it needs them. The number of troops mentioned during the briefing was in the thousands, and the NYPD may get some form of federal assistance, whether they want it or not, sources said. With a convention labeled a national special security event, the Secret Service is the lead federal coordinating agency. The aim is to handle potential protesters while keeping the city running like normal, several officials said. Attacks on the private contractors rebuilding Iraq are boosting security expenses, cutting into reconstruction funds, and compelling U.S. officials in Baghdad to contend with growing legions of private armed security teams spread throughout the country. The Coalition Provisional Authority's Infrastructure Security Planning Group in Baghdad says spiraling cost, excessive work delays, lost material and workforce casualties in the current threat environment have the potential to put coalition success at risk. The CPA's Program Management Office is seeking to hire a central coordinator for the private security teams in anticipation of the thousands of foreign workers and hundreds of new work sites that will flood Iraq starting next month. More after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
Bird flu may have decimated poultry businesses across Asia, but rat dealers have never had it so good. With customers shying away from chicken for fear of catching the deadly flu virus that has killed millions of birds and at least 20 people, Van Vath, a rat butcher in western Cambodia, has been selling more than 440 pounds of rodent meat every morning, twice her normal turnover. In the far-flung corners of the jungle-clad and impoverished Southeast Asian nation, rat, fried, grilled, or roasted with garlic and vegetables, is a highly prized delicacy.
For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica.
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Let us be dissatisfied, said Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., until the dark yesterdays of segregated schools will be transformed into bright tomorrows of quality integrated education. Thanks to the broad civil rights movement and the prevailing goodwill of the American people, our country strived for years to reach that bright tomorrow. And while we never quite got there, we made great strides, and at least we were trying as a nation. But then, stuff happened. In the name of cutting excessive government spending, budgets for public education began to be slashed by opportunistic politicians at all levels. Through their short-sightedness, our once proud public school system is being reduced to shambles. School buildings themselves are in dangerous states of deterioration. Classrooms are so jammed that many are little more than warehouses. Basic teaching equipment and supplies are unavailable. Teachers are now being forced to instruct students on how to pass a standardized test rather than teaching cognitive skills. And the idea of quality education for all has been made to take a back seat to tax cut for corporations and the wealthy. As for integrated education, the picture is even more dismal, as legislative bodies and courts have cynically abandoned our national striving for that still worthy goal. A new national study by Harvard University researchers finds that America's schools today are practically as segregated as they were when Dr. King was assassinated in 1968. In the late 1980s, public policy abandoned King's vision, halting our decades-long commitment to integration. As a result, the trend has rapidly reversed, and most white students now have little contact with black and Latino students. In southern states, 70% of black students are now in predominantly black schools. In western states, some 80% of Latino students are in predominantly minority schools, twice as many as in 1968. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's time for all of us to be dissatisfied again.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Doug. Yeah, yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
I know you're out there somewhere. I know I'll find you somehow, and somehow I'll return.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
The words that I remember from my childhood still are true. That there's none so blind as those who will not see. I know you're out there somewhere.
Welcome back. 7:30 past the hour. We're right in the middle of, if you're just joining us, conversation with Albert in Augusta, Georgia. We are talking about what happened to Howard Dean. As you know, he bailed out today, and that's what we're talking about. Albert, you were about to say, I believe you were about to say there was something you wanted to say from the heart.
Yeah, it was something I wanted to say from the heart. That was the thing that bothers me most is that the fact that he dropped out early. When actually he could have taken his delegates to the convention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could have been a bad thing, might have been a good thing. But
well, he still has the delegates till he releases them. They are committed.
But this is what I told my mother about 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Mom, I said, you know, I said, the Democratic National Committee has to be careful about alienating his supporters.
Mm-hmm.
She said, why do you say that? I said, because the Democratic National Committee did it back in 68 and 72 when Wallace ran.
Right, and when McGovern ran.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you cannot alienate his voters. And when he said that he was not going to run as a third-party candidate, that was great. The Nader is looking into it as running again. Now, I will say this. and that is, I do believe that Kerry, if Edwards was his vice presidential nominee, that things will work out, and hopefully he may be able to carry two states. But here's my strategy. Now, Dean is not there. Kucinich won't be there. Sharpton won't be there. But we have a Democratic governor in North Carolina, Virginia, Louisiana. If they are able to pull the support of those three Democratic popular governors out of those three states, it's a possibility that the Democrats could possibly take the White House. But what Kerry needs to be careful of is not to alienate Dean's supporters. Because if it happens, just like in 2000, when the Democratic National Committee, when they alienated Bill Bradley's voters and supporters, what happened? They went with Nader. And three of my classmates from college, when I was in school at that time, voted for Nader. And guess what happened? You see what happened in Florida. But I will say this, Mr. Malloy, and I've always called you Mr. Malloy because I give you that much respect, and that is that I do see Kerry winning the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And I see him winning at least by probably a state or two, maybe by a couple of electoral votes. But I'm very disappointed in Dean today because he should have stayed in. He was the reason why I became galvanized and became energized. My fiance and I both were going to vote for our Dean here in the South with no problem.
Right. 'Cause
I knew either way Kerry was going to take it. But if I couldn't do Dean, I would have taken Edwards. But I tell you one thing, Dean lit a fire in the ass of the DNC, and so many people like Terry McAuliffe and Donna Brazile, and everybody else believed that he could not take it to Bush. But I do believe that he could have.
Mm-hmm.
And people said that if RFK would have never been shot, that Nixon would have lost to two Kennedys.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me because of the fact that everyone is so concerned about who can beat Bush. If Bush would have won this election against Dean, fine. But guess what? The next time around, those same grassroots supporters who supported Dean, that supported Kucinich, and everybody else would have had a stronger candidate in 2008. And sometimes it's just best to say, look, you know, well, we couldn't do it in 2004, but our grassroots organization is so strong right now that we can defeat a Cheney, or we can defeat a Giuliani, or we can defeat the gentleman from Tennessee, the surgeon, the fake surgeon, whatever his
Frist,
name is.
Yeah, Bill Frist.
Right.
Yeah.
So we can do those things. But, see, I do believe Kerry can do it, but I'm disappointed because our grassroots organization has been totally destroyed. And if Kerry is smart, he does not want to alienate Dean's voters and Dean's supporters, because if they do, they're going to go to either Nader or the other guy who ran for the Green Party thing out there in California.
Right. Well, good point. Al, thanks. I appreciate your opinion, pal.
Thanks a lot.
All right, sir. Thanks for checking in. Rick in Bellingham, Washington, emails in, Mike, I think it's simple what happened to Dean's support. I don't believe it was as much the influence of the media, nor do I believe that his support was non-existent prior to Iowa. I suspect the country is so eager to have a new president to be a counterbalance to Bush that when Kerry pulled off his win in Iowa, a lot of people automatically lined up behind him, thus eroding Dean's support to some degree. I don't think it's so much a matter of strong preference for either Dean or Kerry or anyone else. It's more the effect of a country full of people like me who are fed up and want anyone but Bush. Rick in Washington. Spitfire says he's putting on his tinfoil hat and then asks the question, how many of these states where the primaries have been held had electronic voting? Several of you focused on that theme. Diana in Florida, do we have reason to question already the accuracy and honesty of the voting process itself? And if so, what are we going to do about it? Reference to the electronics. Diane of Riverside, Indiana, says, really sinister idea here, Mike. What part of the voting machines playing in the what part are the voting machines playing in the selection of the Democrats' top runners? Just asking because it scares me. Two, the possible extent that these machines and the men behind them might be playing while we are caught up with worrying about putting food on our families. Joe in Cypress Springs, Texas. Could it be the voting machines as the reason that Dean didn't win any primaries? Elizabeth from Northern Ohio My husband and I had the same reaction as you while watching Governor Dean. He thrilled us with his enthusiasm, especially after all the non-actions of the Pink Tutu Democrats. The next day I attended a Democratic women's luncheon, and some of them expressed negative remarks that astounded me, but being new, I was curious about the reaction. I believe the media got out their weapons of mass destruction and used them against Dean, is what Elizabeth is saying. I pray that the future brings only... Oh good thing. Okay, for me and Kathy. Thank you, Elizabeth. From Shelby, over at radiopower.org, Mike, it's time to face reality. Kerry has been anointed to be the successor to Bush. Corporate America is perfectly happy with either shill. Dean was destroyed by the media. The 17 primary states thus far have been small conservative states. The media destroyed Dean before he ever made it to the large liberal states. We've been had. Kerry is just Bush light. From Margie, our Bakersfield, California Bureau Chief, Mike and Kathy, what you're seeing and feeling is a setting up to steal another election. My discomfort level is very high as well. In Florida, Congressman Wexler's case to get printed paper ballots was thrown out of court. Howard Dean was vilified for a noise. We're being set up again, Mike. This is what is happening. Our country is lost already. We thought it was lost. If W got another 4 years, I honestly think it's a done deal. I can no longer take a breath. My country is gone, and I can't do anything about it. Ted in Maine. Mike, come on, say it. You know what many of us know. Howard Dean was sunk by the DLC, the same as Dennis Kucinich, Cynthia McKinney, and anyone else with the cojones to challenge the corporate orthodoxy. If we don't start calling the right-leaning DLC out into the open, the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party will never see the light of day again. And he also sends me from alternet.org. You might want to check this out. The assassination of Howard Dean. Alternet.org. I know you all are familiar with that website. Diane and Flora, this was the first one was a postscript. This is what she wrote. I don't understand Dean's backing out either. It's much too early for any candidate to say it's over. I'm very angry with the media treating the race as if it is over. The biggest states haven't even had their primaries yet, and I don't like the little states making a decision on the nominee. I can remember when we didn't find out who the candidate would be until the convention. I like it that way. A lot can happen between now and then, and the more months spent campaigning, the more we learn about the candidates. At least I'm glad Dean didn't throw his votes to Kerry. Alex, Mike, it's really unfortunate to see Howard Dean go. I can't believe that the two so-called frontrunners both voted to give Bush authorization to go to war and both voted for the Patriot Act. Those are two issues. Those two issues are going to be neutralized if either Edwards or Kerry get the nomination. What does that leave the Democrats to attack Bush on? I'm glad to see that at least Kucinich is still running, and I hope he can gain traction in the weeks ahead. But I'm pessimistic about that. From Mark, the only reason the Democratic Party has made strides at all in the past year is because, A, Bush has been spectacularly unlucky, even with the compliant press filleting him every other minute, and, B, because Howard Dean made it safe for the other candidates to start taking whacks at Bush. Howard Dean took all the abuse, he took the mudslinging, he took the risks, and for that, the DNC slipped a shiv in his back. And the DNC wonders why people are so apathetic about the political process. They wonder why Democrats are disillusioned. They wonder why Republicans keep winning. Just a couple more here. I'd like to get these in because these are folks who email. Mike, what you have to realize is that for most Democrats, Bill Clinton is still the president and will be such until a Democrat is in the White House. Clinton is the power in the DLC. He is the key strategist. He is still the most popular politician among minorities. He is the only American politician that has international credibility. Dean made a fundamental error, believing he could both challenge Clinton, the DLC, and win the nomination in one step. The Gore endorsement infuriated Clinton and the DLC. This has to be a two-step process. Win the nomination, and hopefully the White House, and then, and only then, take on the Democratic Party. At that point, Clinton would hand the mantle to Hillary, and the new president would have the power to try to reform the party. I believe that Clinton and the DLC simply got out the vote for anyone who could beat Dean. I think you overestimate the power of the media campaign against Dean, although it probably helped Clinton get Dean thrown out. Don't underestimate Bill. Just because he is quiet and doing stuff behind the scenes, that is the essence of his brilliance. And there's more here, but I will just, from Kurt and Austin and Angus and Max, Max said regarding Dean, he had no faith in himself, and people could feel it. When he had that big explosion in the one primary where he came in third, I think his supporters felt that he wasn't really interested in winning. I think that is why Kerry came on so quick and went to the top. There are people in this world that get more pleasure out of being second. Well, really? Well, okay, I guess so. Ron in Fort Wayne, Mike, could the problem with Dean be that he was too Clinton-esque? No military background, back problems, then caught on the ski slopes. The Republicans were even saying that they were salivating over the prospect of having to deal with Dean. Unlike you, something does seem wrong here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Nah, I'm tired of this crappy job.
What? I thought you loved this job. You have a company car. You even have a
expense account.
Yeah. What's the problem?
I have to listen to all this junk radio, and I miss all my favorite political talk shows like Tom Hartman and Peter B. Collins. I have to beat a stupid job.
Why don't you listen to it on your computer like me?
Because for some stupid reason, I have to pay attention to what's going on at work or something like that. I don't remember. I wasn't listening. All I know is that I'm pretty cranky when I miss my shows.
You think?
I should just go over there and tell him that I'm not coming to work until I listen to my shows, and if he's got a problem with it, then we can go outside, punk.
Hold on there. Just listen to the best in political talk on Sundays.
The what?
The best in political talk on Sundays from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time. You can hear the best of Tom Hartman and Peter B. Collins.
Really? Well, that's better than picking a fight with the boss.
Yeah, you'll keep your job and your health.
What? You don't think I can take him?
He's big, dude.
I would waste him.
Yeah, right.
That's the best of political talk Sunday nights from 10 to midnight Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
Handy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware. John Seip from United Marketing Force. Jay Brentlinger from Orban. And, of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show. Take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years. So join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
Do you believe in truth? Are you tired of right-wing rhetoric? Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-four past the hour, we are talking about Howard Dean's bailing out of the primary season today. Brian is calling from Manchester, New Hampshire. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Howard Dean, he's going to remain, his voice in this presidential campaign is going to remain the leading driving voice of the anger of this country after that 2000 election and the anger about the voting machines. Howard Dean is a true Green Mountain boy, a true American patriot. And he was blacklisted by our media. That's the best way to put it. The same way that Kucinich was, Carol Moseley Braun, the woman I supported, and Al Sharpton were. Bob Graham was. He's a conservative Democrat. Even after his 911 commission repeatedly said that that horror could have been prevented, all of that. Someone was mentioning Robert F. Kennedy in a book I always go to for when I'm really down about things is Robert F. Kennedy's Make Gentle the Life of This World, the vision of Robert F. Kennedy by his son, Maxwell Taylor Kennedy. Mm-hmm. On page 74, just a quick line here, a revolution is coming, a revolution which will be peaceful if we are wise enough, compassionate if we care enough, successful if we are fortunate enough. And then it goes on from there. I'll let people just look for the book, The Make Gentle the Life of This World, on Robert F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Howard Dean tapped into the anger of this country regarding that 2000 election and everything that's happened since, including 911. And I was going to call up, I was trying to be on a more positive note, that I was hoping that under a Carrier Edwards presidency, the FCC chairman would become Howard Dean. And I think that's what we need.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I would say to my fellow Democrats, to my fellow liberals, to my fellow free-thinking people of any background and any political party, quote unquote. This comes from the book. It's a real book. It's real writing. Fart Proudly, Writings of Benjamin Franklin You Never Read in School, but edited by Carl Chapixie.
Mm-hmm.
The final line is fart for liberty, fart for freedom, fart for liberty, and fart proudly. End quote. And that's the only way you get on the level with these Republican so-called thinkers in the major media. That's the only kind of language they understand. I know it gets back to that Mr. Slingblade fellow. I wouldn't want to meet him in a dark alley either.
No.
But I'm telling you, that's what it's coming to. But they've brought this on themselves, and I just think that they blacklisted Mr. Dean. His anger was then transferred to the angry acting John Kerry. But I don't know if he's going to keep it up. That blue blood part of him is going to eventually come out in some relaxed part of some debate or something, and then the Bushes go after that like, you know what I'm saying. You know the way they play.
Right.
Like a rat going after another dead rat if he's got nothing else to eat.
Yeah.
They just, and I shouldn't insult the Rodent family that way, comparing the Bush dynasty to them. But you take care. God love you. I still, I know I sent my phony, fictitious Mike Malloy for Congress website there, but I say that might be a good way to get you out of the house and out of Kathy's way so she can have a, you know, keep you busy, and I think you could be a great congressman. I really believe that.
I think we're both going to apply for unemployment and food stamps.
Oh, no.
But thanks, Brian.
Thank you, sir.
All right, sir. I appreciate you checking in. Jake is calling from San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Jake.
Yeah, hey, how's it going? How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. I'm going to miss you when you go off the air.
I'm going to miss me, too, but we'll find something.
All right, cool. Well, anyway, I wanted to talk about Dean, because
okay.
I went to see him, I guess it was late August or September when he came here on his sleepless summer tour.
Hey, can I get you? Hold on a second, Jay.
Sure.
All right, we got to do a break here. We'll come back and pick you up right on the other side of the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
From these falls my account for the wrong man. Get those electoral votes. Copy up anyway.
Old folks in Palm Beach saying why did I have to make my ballot a butterfly? I mean, I eat dinner by 4 and yogurt by 10 and there ain't no way that I voted for Buchanan. Now, in case they get tangled in a revote web, no need to sweat, W. You can count on Brother Jeff. Uh-oh, and we better get Mako to fix this. Now, leave it up to Thomas Scalia and Rehnquist. Got a blank ballot, absentee, you overseas. Seminole will fill it in long as you're down with the GOP. And the WB.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
Two environmental filmmakers strive to be fair, but objectivity is in the eye of the beholder. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Larry Hott and Diane Gary have been telling environmental stories through sound and pictures for 25 years. Hott says the documentary movie-making process constantly poses ethical choices.
There's a lot of rule bending that you can do when you make a film. You're starting with a selection process right from the beginning. What statements are going to go in? Who's going to end up on the editing room floor? What images are you going to use to illustrate your point of view? You can easily show, for example, a clear-cut forest. And on the screen, all you see is stumps. But you can leave out the perfectly beautifully managed forest on the edge of the screen.
Diane Gary says it takes conscious effort to keep a film from becoming one-sided.
One thing I think that we've done, and I would encourage anybody in the film world to do, is to not make anybody look like an idiot. If you film pro-timber harvest and anti-timber harvest people, try to make them look like equal adversaries. Then people can decide for themselves. I don't think we really convert anybody from one position to another, but I do think we add to the debate in an intelligent way.
Hott and Gary agree that a filmmaker is always choosing between what he or she wants to say and wants to leave out. Larry Hott.
People have this impression that because it's documentary, it's true. But it's as true as any story anybody has ever told anybody else. It's point of view and what you choose to keep in, what you choose to keep out. In the end, it's a matter of opinion.
Hott and Gary say there are always multiple points of view to any story, including their own. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Flying monkey ride blues. Here's the cure. Mike Malloy.
Better speak to the powers
27 before the hour. All right, we're talking with Jake in San Antonio, Texas. Jake, thanks for holding on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I went to see Howard Dean speak when he came here. You know, I can't remember if it was late August or early September, around then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was fantastic to watch, and it was timely. He was tapped right into the issues of the moment, and particularly Iraq, which is obviously something that's got a lot of people fuming. But I must say that shortly after that, I read a piece that appeared, a big piece that appeared in The Nation, that was casting aspersions, really, on his candidacy, or at least I felt it was that way, and it was a guy who had gone on that particular tour and was describing Dean in the airplane and, you know, going between cities, kind of rehearsing his speeches. And the whole, you know, the whole tone of the piece was generally one of, you know, this is not a genuine guy. And I think that partly there was an argument that came from the left all the way through his being a front runner, which was that, you know, well, he's more conservative than you think. And in some respects, for some people on the left, that may have discouraged them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think whatever it was, it certainly started a long time before he said that stuff about breaking up the big media companies.
Right.
And, well, you know, as far as being the front runner early on, you know, he was always going to be facing a lot of attacks and stuff from the other candidates. And I'm not sure he dealt with those very well. I think that may be another reason.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not sure how. I think he sort of got tempted into sniping back and forth.
Right, right.
Which perhaps might not have been the best way to handle those attacks. You know, if he'd risen above them a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
It might have stood him in better stead. But anyway, one other thing, actually, I wanted to say about Blair being an Englishman. And
right.
I'm sort of unhappy, but not surprised that he hasn't been replaced yet. Because I think his behavior in the few days after the Hutton inquiry came out, the Hutton inquiry gave his findings, and the few days between then and when George Bush was pressured into, you know, initiating his own
right.
inquiry, he behaved just absolutely disgustingly. I thought, you know, him sort of crowing and demanding mm-hmm. apologies from the BBC
mm-hmm.
was outrageous. And
Jake, listen, that's so far afield of what we're talking about. We'll get to that topic, but I want to get some more calls about this
okay.
thing.
All right.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in, Jake. I do. It's just that I want to get to this, the Dean story, because to me it's a big story. To Dean supporters, it has to be a big story. Ludovico is calling from Miami. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yeah, you are.
Okay, welcome to the program, Ludovico.
Okay, this is actually my first time I was listening to from online.
Uh-huh.
Online radio.
Right.
Look, I want to talk about Dean.
Go ahead.
I believe the media has attacked Dean a lot because if you look at the kind of documentaries that they have done against Dean,
mm-hmm.
like the one they did two kinds of documentary, which one was like how he was all excited.
Right.
About that he was in second place, or I don't remember what he was all excited about.
Uh-huh.
And there was another documentary that I even read, which I find very ridiculous, which was actually about the microphone, that he used a special microphone
mm-hmm.
that took all the noise out of everyone who was talking on
right.
the back.
Right,
which I believe is very stupid because, okay, he used a special microphone. That's what technology is about, right?
No, I... Wait, I'm not sure what you're saying. There are microphones that eliminate what is called, and you probably know this, little because it's called ambient noise.
Yeah.
So that the only sound picked up is the sound of the candidate, in this case Howard Dean. That's exactly what happened. He was using a mic that he couldn't hear because of the noise of the crowd.
Yeah.
And he was screaming. So, finally CNN pointed it out. Or is that what you were just saying to me?
No, I was trying to point out that I don't get what the big deal is if he was using a special mic.
The microphone he was using did not pick up the ambient noise, the screaming and yelling. Had it picked up all that noise for us at home on television to see, we would have realized that Howard Dean was screaming over the crowd. He was trying to make himself heard over the crowd. He wasn't screaming because he felt like screaming.
Yeah.
He was trying to be heard over the crowd. Now, eventually, weeks after that occurred, the media whores at CNN pointed that out, that the microphone he was using was one that did not pick up ambient noise. A noise in the area, and only picked up his voice, and that's why it sounded so shrill.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Yeah, but I still believe the media has, like, attacked him and all the kind of case that he was kind of excited.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like, okay, just because someone gets a little bit excited, or which he wasn't, because you just point out to me he was trying to speak over people.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
That doesn't mean they're stupid. It just means that they're kind of excited.
Yeah, I hear you. Thanks, you know? Ludovico.
Okay.
All right, sir. Appreciate you checking in. From CNN, they did a presidential poll. You take this with as many grains of salt or trains of salt or tons of salt as you want. A head-to-head contest. 55% said they would choose Kerry for president over Bush, who drew the support of 43%. That's double digits. Edwards also led Bush 54 to 44%. Our Haley, Idaho correspondent Jim sent that to us. Now, I've come to believe that polls are just weird. It depends on how the questions are asked. It depends on who forms the base of the polling universe, and so on and so forth. But it is interesting that the numbers come up that way. From our Chattanooga correspondent, R.W., regarding Dean, he wrote in, "Mike, I feel robbed and betrayed. The media started by shoving Kucinich into the shadows even before voting started. Then they went after Dean. Not sure why. Maybe they had leftover animus for Gore, who supported Dean. Maybe it was due to Dean's threat to break up the media blocks in this country. Or perhaps they were flexing their godlike power to set the agenda for this country. Whatever reason, we were treated to reports of the failing Dean campaign, while Edwards and Clark were supposedly fighting it out for second. So it has worked. It has worked. Dean, who is still number two in delegate count, is dropping out. Now we're treated to choosing between Kerry, an establishment Democrat, and Edwards, yet another Southern Democrat. And we both know about those Southern Democrats, don't we, Mike?" And there's more here from R.W., but it's a little bit too long to go completely into. All right, you want to keep talking about this a little bit more? Okay, Angelo is calling from the Bronx. Hey, Angelo.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Doing fine, sir.
I wouldn't call Dean bailing out at this point. He looked at the political calculus, and basically he would have ran out of money long before he gets to Super Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here in New York, the primary season wouldn't have come up for another month and a half or so. What he went up against was mostly the establishment Democrats, as the other letter writer put in. The Democratic establishment had no intention Dean get this far.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Having worked in a couple of campaigns myself, what happened in Iowa, basically, Dean was right 2 years ago when he basically called the New Hampshire and Iowa caucuses almost irrelevant.
Right.
And they are irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The fact is there was a couple of political machinations that went on in the Iowa caucuses, and he was right on another thing. Most of his supporters are under 30, and they're new to the political process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only thing less dirty than a political campaign is a rule is football game. The young campaign workers went to Iowa, had a lot of enthusiasm, and got beaten.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it hurts like a punch in the stomach, but you get over that.
Right.
They weren't ready for that. This is the taste of what real politics is like. Yeah, people cheat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people connive. This is the way of things. So Dean is actually taking the better tack. He's not going to be able to beat them from the outside as an outsider. He has to become an insider.
Mm-hmm.
In order for the Democratic Party to win, they'll win easily, believe it or not. They'll win the White House.
Right.
But it's the accommodationist Democrats, you know, the yellow dog Democrats,
mm-hmm.
and the party that has to be changed from the inside. A political science teacher of mine recommended a book to me called Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky.
Right.
And basically said that you can do one of three things. You can give up and just go drop out. You can go cry into the wailing wall. Or you can become the power and you take on the power.
Right.
And that's what we have to learn from here.
Yeah, and a Kerry presidency, I will vote for the man, but a Kerry presidency guarantees that the Democratic Party will not be cleaned out.
No, not just yet.
No, not just yet. I don't. Well, what the hell's it going to take? They've lost everything. The Democratic Party has lost, in a sense, the judiciary, the House, the Senate, the presidency, the state legislatures. What's it going to take?
It's going to take a clean out from the inside.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. But there has to be, don't you think, some kind of attitude at the top, i.e. the president's office, that says, look, we've got to reform the Democratic Party. As one of the callers pointed out, the way you reform the Democratic Party is get rid of Terry McAuliffe and bring in somebody new who represents Democrats.
Well, let's take a page out of the Republican book. Remember 1964. If you were a Republican in November 3rd, 1964...
Goldwater,
you took a butt-whipping.
Yeah, absolutely.
You absolutely did.
Right.
Now, what did they do? They said, look, what we're going to do is we're going to take over the party. And within, 8 years, they had the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Within 16 years, they had the legislature.
Right.
Okay? That's the page we have to take out now. Yes, we took a defeat tonight. All his Dean supporters. But now we have to go underground and take over the party. Like it says in the Dean website, this is not the end, this is the beginning.
All right. Well, I hope that's the case. Angela, thanks for checking in, pal.
Thank you very much.
Always good to hear from you. Want to do one more? Marianne, our bureau chief in Aurora, Illinois, is checking in. Hey, Marianne.
Hey, I enjoyed some of the last caller's observations about the Dean people, because that was the impression I had. A lot of people were very enthusiastic. He really did develop a tool that hadn't been developed before or underdeveloped using the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if people, and Democrats, you know, they've been kind of whiny over the last 10 years. I mean, Bill Clinton excluded. I think Bill Clinton was like a one-person show. I mean, as a party, we've been in disarray for so long that some of us have started to, you know, take a page from the Republicans just in the fact that they could... The Republicans, even out of power, never believed they were out of power.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to start believing that, you know, we're not out of power either. But I have
the only thing in that equation, and the equation put out there by the caller from the Bronx, is, you know, we live in very strange times. We live in times where the very idea of representative government is about to collapse, on the verge of collapse, where the very idea of Mussolini fascism, i.e. corporatism, if not about to take place, has already taken place. Now, it's one thing to have a good, solid attitude, and I will maintain it, but how do you maintain it in the rank and file in the light of what's going on? That's my only question.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I think that actually I'd sent you some email, but the point I kind of wanted to make with the Dean demise is, apart from Dean, some of his own faults in terms of the inexperience of his people, I think that is irrelevant, though, to what actually happened. I mean, I saw it a week and a half before the Iowa caucus, and when I was casually going through TV, I don't watch very much, but Kerry was on. I mean, Kerry was on all the time, and he was polling in the single digits. And, you know, sure enough, the week before the caucus, his numbers steadily went up in Iowa. But he wasn't doing anything differently. Our dean wasn't doing anything differently. It was just the media exposure. And, you know, I think this latest, what happened last night with Edwards having this surge,
mm-hmm.
same thing.
Right.
2 weeks ago, well, you know I'm a Clark supporter. And 2 weeks ago, I saw Clark win one, Edwards win one. I saw Clark come in third and second.
Mm-hmm.
Where Edward placed a distant fourth
right. After
Dean in all three of these in three of these contests, yet you know, Clark was invisible. They were dialing Dean up, or they're dialing Edwards up. They're still dialing up, as you pointed out. He still has less delegates than Dean, and Dean
mm-hmm.
falls off. So I guess you know for the all right. So I guess for the time being, I guess Tara McAuliffe's faction of the Democratic Party has won. But what makes them think that there are candidates who have effectively been dialed up by the media, not really by any efforts of theirs,
mm-hmm.
can't easily be dialed down?
Well, that's true, and that's a very real possibility.
Kerry, you know, not only was Edwards being dialed up, but I think Kerry took a bit of a hit from that internet sludge that
yeah.
came over, and people like Thomas Oliphant were using, I mentioned in my note, he was using it to diss Clark, but he was taking what Matt Drudge was saying as true.
I know.
You know, this was a liberal columnist.
Yeah,
I mean, Jesus, the media is, and I'm saying so, my point is that if Edwards or Kerry, and they're either one of those two are probably going to be the front runner.
Hey, I need to get you, hold on, Marianne, we'll be right back.
But hanging on is easy. When you've got a friend to call, when nothing's making sense at all, you're not the only one who's afraid of change.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine.
in, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of Ultralipolene at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pants sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
Did you pick up your phone book the other day and almost get a hernia because of all the lawyer ads? Do you panic when you turn on the television and there is another lawyer encouraging you to call him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to find out who you can sue and what your rights are? Well, you don't need that anymore. But you know, you don't get your surgeon out of the yellow pages, and you don't need a retainer fee to listen to me. The Legal Huddle is your one-stop radio shop for everything you would ever want to know about the American legal system. I'm Ed Zelenak. I've been a prosecutor, band leader, foreign diplomat, and advisor to presidential candidates. And as your host of the Legal Huddle, I'm uniquely qualified to answer everything you ever wanted to know about the law but were afraid to ask. And you know, if I don't know the answer, I'll make one up. You can call me with your questions, your comments, your opinions, and your feelings about our judiciary. And you know something? I will never hold you in contempt of court in the Legal Huddle. So join me and a cast of thousands here in the Legal Huddle, Sunday mornings, 9 until 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Tom Hartman. I'm calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on, when corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people getting less, where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed. Where people could work to get ahead, but at the same time, we don't leave people starving in the streets. The eternal question of this program is, are we advancing democracy or are we advancing corporatism?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. Here's Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour, we are talking with our bureau chief in Aurora, Illinois, Marianne. Okay, about a minute and a half here, Marianne.
Okay. I was going to say that I think the front runner, whoever they are, had better realize, and I think maybe they're smart enough to realize that, how they got there.
Mm-hmm.
However, they may be talking to their supporters. And I think also that I know personally that the Clark campaign is staying in the race, not necessarily to support Clark for president, he's out, but we are going to be there to make sure that the Democrats have as big a chance as winning in November mm-hmm. as they can. And I think the Dean people are hanging in there, too. And one of the things we learned was also to get to the local press. Local press seems to be amazingly progressive these days.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of their, just in terms of the kind of editorials they're getting it out here.
Yeah, I hope so.
I
hope that's the case. I hope that's the case. Thanks,
okay.
Marianne.
Bye.
All right, appreciate it. Ouch, what did I do? Oops. Hit the wrong button again, did I, Kathy? Oh, my God. Doug in California wrote this. Mike, I'm here in California with my Dean sticker on my car, and I didn't even get a chance to bat. I can't begin to tell you how disappointed I am. 32 million people in my state, and the people in Iowa decided for us. I don't know what's fair, but it's not this. This is crap. I will support the Democratic candidate, whoever it is, but the Dean sticker stays on. Yeah, the Democratic Party, Democratic Leadership Conference, they're the ones who front-loaded these primaries using, you know what states were used, in order to, at least this is what they said, in order to get the candidate as quickly as possible to unify the Democratic Party. Well, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is it certainly gives the establishment candidate, whoever that person happens to be, and usually that's the one with the most money, or the most backing by the establishment, it gives them a chance to solidify a lead that will then appear to be insurmountable to the other candidates. And you pays your money and takes your pick, I guess, as to which one is more representative of the idea of democracy. But with Dean dropping out, with everybody gone now, with the exception, and I'm sorry, Sharpton is effectively out, but with the exception of Kerry and Edwards and Kucinich, I guess, is still in there, right? The establishment is making all the calls.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2004.
Here she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fantila mm-hmm. is like go, cool. Yeah.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart. You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
George W. Bush's re-election campaign moved deeper into its election playbook yesterday and launched a hollow defense of his economic record in Ohio ahead of a visit by his likely opponent, Senator John F. Kerry. The decision reflects the Bush administration's growing concern about Ohio, a state he won by 4 percentage points in 2000, but is among the hardest hit by job losses. The move is the latest of near-daily signs that Bush's campaign is engaging Kerry as if he were the Democratic nominee. Labor Department figures show that in 2003, Ohio is second only to another swing state, Michigan, in the number of jobs lost. In January, Michigan was first, and Ohio second in the number of jobs lost in the previous month. The award of a major contract to equip the new Iraqi army has triggered an uproar in staunch U.S. allies Poland and Spain, where officials are questioning why their nation's experienced arms firms lost out to an American company with little history in such projects. The $327 million contract to supply everything from canteens to AK-47s was awarded in January to Noor USA, a Virginia-based company whose president is A. Huda Faruqi. Faruqi is a close friend of Ahmed Shebly, a controversial member of the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council who has close ties with some Pentagon officials and is considered a criminal in other countries. The winning bid was so much lower than those by the Polish and Spanish firms that officials from the two nations have questioned Noor USA's ability to even make good on the contract. Federal officials have discussed bringing in U.S. troops to boost security at this summer's Republican National Convention, but the NYPD doesn't think it needs them. The number of troops mentioned during the briefing was in the thousands, and the NYPD may get some form of federal assistance, whether they want it or not, sources said. With a convention labeled a national special security event, the Secret Service is the lead federal coordinating agency. The aim is to handle potential protesters while keeping the city running like normal, several officials said. More after this.
Make a fast friend.
Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
Three classes at Iowa State University, two of them in the past 2 weeks, have been interrupted by a man who flashed students and then ran. A man wearing nothing but a trench coat, a Richard Nixon mask, and tennis shoes entered a class auditorium Friday just as a meteorology exam began, said freshman Eric Triggs. The man opened his trench coat, danced around, and ran from one door to another while yelling, Triggs said. If arrested, the man could be charged with indecent exposure and disorderly conduct, local authorities said.
For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica.
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Let us be dissatisfied, said Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., until the dark yesterdays of segregated schools will be transformed into bright tomorrows of quality integrated education. Thanks to the broad civil rights movement and the prevailing goodwill of the American people, our country strived for years to reach that bright tomorrow. And while we never quite got there, we made great strides, and at least we were trying as a nation. But then, stuff happened. In the name of cutting excessive government spending, budgets for public education began to be slashed by opportunistic politicians at all levels. Through their short-sightedness, our once proud public school system is being reduced to shambles. School buildings themselves are in dangerous states of deterioration. Classrooms are so jammed that many are little more than warehouses. Basic teaching equipment and supplies are unavailable. Teachers are now being forced to instruct students on how to pass a standardized test rather than teaching cognitive skills. And the idea of quality education for all has been made to take a backseat to tax cut for corporations and the wealthy. As for integrated education, the picture is even more dismal, as legislative bodies and courts have cynically abandoned our national striving for that still worthy goal. A new national study by Harvard University researchers finds that America's schools today are practically as segregated as they were when Dr. King was assassinated in 1968. In the late 1980s, public policy abandoned King's vision, halting our decades-long commitment to integration. As a result, the trend has rapidly reversed, and most white students now have little contact with black and Latino students. In southern states, 70% of black students are now in predominantly black schools. In western states, some 80% of Latino students are in predominantly minority schools, twice as many as in 1968. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's time for all of us to be dissatisfied again.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network. Here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Well, Welcome back. 7 past the hour. We are going to move on now. Patrick is with us again. Been holding on forever from Germany. Patrick, welcome to the program again.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. But I hate to tell you, you're just so way off on the gay issue.
I am?
It's so much more important than jobs and war and media and stuff. It's the very fabric of society is at risk here.
Is it? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Let me tell you, I live in Europe.
Yeah.
And it's just breaking down over here. Folks have ignored it for so long, and now half the population is gay.
Mm-hmm.
And you get on one of these streetcars, and chances are you're the only straight guy on board.
Really?
They know. They'll stare at you, check you out up and down. You know what I'm saying? And you know what they want. You can see the little thoughts in their heads. They're out to marry you.
Ah!
And yeah. I'm serious as a heart attack.
No!
Make you feel uncomfortable and unholy and stuff. But
yeah.
Now since no one bothers you, they'll come right at you, three or four of them, holding you down while one of them pulls a wedding ring from his pocket and rams it right down your finger and marries your ass right on the spot.
Oh, no!
Uh-huh. And it gets worse. Listen, since marriage really doesn't mean anything anymore today, people are marrying all kinds of stuff over here, anything they like. They're marrying coffee grinders and silverfish and Republicans and escalators and jam and sidewalks.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible. And it's not just that they're all gay. They're all terrorists, too.
Yeah, it's just a total breakdown of society.
They're sure as hell not with us, so they're terrorists.
There you go.
But they're commies, too. You know, see how it all ties in?
Commie,
you know,
terrorists,
striking,
yeah,
for the 35-hour terror week.
Right.
And come Friday, they take off to their little caverns in the hill and marry some more jam and work on their Mercedes car bombs.
Oh, my God.
And it's coming to our country if we don't stop it. You know, they're probably building a navy right now.
Oh.
And that's why we can't have gays in the military, because, you know, they'll defect come invasion time, and they'll snitch and they'll give away the locations of our high-risers.
Oh.
And then they'll go and marry those and all of our jam.
Ah.
We got to hide them, Mike. Our high-risers, they're way too easy targets.
All right, Patrick.
Hide them better.
All right.
You got to hide. Yeah, you got to take it from me. I've been there. I know. Weapons of matrimonial desecration.
Is that what it is? Weapons of matrimonial desecration.
Yes.
All right, I got you. Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate your checking in. Woo! I didn't know that was going on in Europe. Yesterday, Fort Polk, Louisiana, Bush, once again, disgraced men and women in uniform. He was there to, quote, thank, close quote, American soldiers. He said, in the war, America's appearance to our military to meet the dangers abroad and keep our country safe. American people appreciate his sacrifice. Meanwhile, Bush adamantly refuses to fund some of the most important priorities to soldiers, veterans, and their families. Have I mentioned tonight how much I hate this guy? As the Daily Mislead puts it, last year while troops were at war, Bush proposed slashing $1.5 billion from family military housing, tried to roll back recent modest increases in bonuses paid to soldiers serving in combat zones, refused to extend the child tax credit to 1 million children living in military and veteran families. This year it's getting worse. While this cowardly punk rambles on about how much he appreciates troops and veterans, Congressional Quarterly reported on February 4th that Bush's own Secretary for Veterans Affairs told lawmakers on Capitol Hill that Bush rejected a desperate request for $1.2 billion in funding needed for veterans' health care. The Veterans of Foreign Wars issued a statement after receiving the White House's budget showing this, calling it disgraceful and saying it was a disgrace and a sham. You know, I again, just like there are a lot of things I don't understand, I'll never understand how those soldiers can show up. Well, they have to show up at a rally for this pig, but to applaud him and hoo-ah him instead of just sitting there in stone-cold silence. There is nothing in the Uniform Code of Military Justice that says all you have to do is salute a superior officer. You do not have to stand up and cheer and go hoo-ah. And Bush, this miserable little rat bastard, stands in front of these soldiers. These men and women, and in this case it was a National Guard group that was about to be sent over to die for his oil buddies. He stands there in front of them. How many of those soldiers understand how this pig and his administration is destroying veteran benefits, destroying the benefits of people in uniform while they are in uniform, destroying their families back home? I wonder how many soldiers are going to vote Republican this time. Bush, today, with the Tunisian President Ben Ali, on the report, has nothing to do with Ben Ali, although it was kind of funny today. I watched a little bit on CNN when it was live. A Tunisian reporter or someone, a French reporter or Arabic, whatever it was a foreign language. And one of the reporters asked Ben Ali a lengthy question, a very lengthy question. The question went on, I swear to God, this question must have gone on for 90 seconds. In television, 90 seconds is a week. And Bush sat there. Now, you know the guy's ADD, he's a cokehead, and he's a dry drunk. He sat there, and the camera finally went right to his face. You should have seen the expressions on Bush's face while he's waiting not just for the answer in that, or the question in that foreign language, but the answer then that came from Ben Ali was damn near as long as the question. It was a rare moment in television history. Anyway, they are sitting together in the White House. Reporter says, Mr. President, do you think the economy is strong enough to produce the 2.6 million jobs this year as your economic report is projecting? Listen to the answer.
I think the economy is growing, and I think it's going to get stronger. But I do think there are some things we need to do. We need to make sure the tax cuts are permanent. I look forward to continuing to talk about this issue. I'm pleased by the fact that since August, there's been 366,000 new jobs in one survey.
Yeah.
There's another survey called the Household Account that's been more optimistic.
Yeah.
But I'm mindful there are still people looking for work, and we've got to continue work building on the progress we've made so far.
Now, remember, Bush signed the report. Okay? Now, obviously, he didn't read it. He doesn't understand it. He knows as much about economics as you and I know about quantum physics. Well, Marianne knows a lot about it. But if you're not our Aurora, Illinois Bureau Chief, if you're like me, you don't know squat about quantum physics, except some of the terminology. Well, that's the way it works with Bush. He doesn't understand economics. He couldn't care less. So he comes up with that answer. Mr. President, you think the economy is strong enough to produce 2.6 million jobs this year? That's as many as have been lost almost in the first three years and 3 months of his administration. He didn't answer. He says, I'm pleased by the fact that since August there's been 366,000 new jobs in one survey. Yeah, what survey is that? Now, Simple Scotty, moving over to the press briefing today, Simple Scotty gets hammered by the press for this report that Bush signed, and doesn't know what he signed, put out by the Council of Economic Advisers. It claims, claims that Bush will magically create 2.6 million jobs by next November. Then, of course, after Bush signs the report, he backs down and says this report is merely a forecast. That's what you just heard him say. So, in the White House press room today, reporter begins with, Scott, does the White House stand behind its report issued by the economic report issued just 9 days ago that says there will be 2.6 million new jobs created this year? That's what the report says, Scott. Do you stand behind it?
I think the people can debate the numbers all they want. The president is focused on acting on policies to create as robust an environment for job creation as possible so that we can help those who are hurting because they are looking for work and cannot find a job. The president is encouraged by the direction the economy is moving. It is growing stronger. It is strong and growing stronger.
Well, now hold on just a second, Scott, you little jackass. Job creation? The president is focused on acting on policies to create as robust an environment for job creation. Oh, that's right. That's like the weapons of mass destruction changing into weapons programs or ideas of possible weapons programs someday a thousand years from now. Now it's an environment for job creation. You see, the report they're asking about specifically said 2.6 million jobs to be created.
No, well, the president is focused on an environment for job creation.
Same topic. Another reporter says, well, Scott, when you dismiss the premise of John's question there by saying people can debate the numbers, let's be realistic here. The debate is going on between your Council of Economic Advisors and your Secretary of the Treasury, John Snow. Are there people here in this White House who never believed the forecast? Because it would appear that people very high up in this administration didn't have a whole lot of faith in the forecast of the report that went up to Congress just a week ago. Is that true, Scott?
I think that the Council of Economic Advisors puts out an annual report on the economy. It's the president's economic report, and they do that every year. They've been doing it for some 20 years now.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's based on economic modeling and the data that is available at that point in time. The president is interested in the actual number of jobs being created. And the president is interested in making sure that everybody who is looking for a job can find one. That's where the president's focus is.
Oh, good.
You know, that's why I say people can debate the numbers all they want.
Yeah, okay.
But the president's going to be looking at the actual numbers of jobs being created.
Okay, okay. The actual number of jobs being created. Then why did he say 2.6 million in his forecast? Boy, are you a dumbass, Scott, and it's very hard to talk around you because you just keep talking. God, this guy is weird. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know why Bush wants to phony up these job numbers before the election. And we'll have that aspect of it for you. When we come back, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm not an economist, but if I were, I'd probably say there's a 50% chance it would happen soon and a 50% chance it wouldn't.
Not for you. It's a wonderful life. No stress, no strife. Never hurry, never worry. And young, one might wonder what great things they've done to become the fortunate one. They're the happy members of the Lucky Sperm Club. The only thing they have to do is be conceived. It's great to be a member of the Lucky Sperm Club. Living in the life of lazy luxury.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine.
children, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of Ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pants sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
The Mike Molloy Show.
NBC Wall Street Journal poll. Bush is in the worst political trouble of his presidency, according to this new poll. Yeah, they have their work cut out for them. What's it going to be? Is it going to be a phony assassination attempt on Bush like they staged with Reagan? Is it going to be another attack on U.S. soil where another 3,000 Americans and foreigners are going to be killed? Is it going to be another attack on another country? What are they going to do since they can't govern? Huh? So look for another war. The guy is toast, and you know it as well as I do, Truth Seekers, and maybe, just maybe, some Americans are coming out of the ether. But don't count on it, because they'll go right back into the ether as soon as these thugs engineer an act of violence against this country, or another war, or something about Bush. Oh, Bush broke his leg today. He was running and he stumbled. Oh, sympathy, sympathy. You know what I'm talking about.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1. $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
The man conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Molloy.
24 past the hour. Okay. As I was saying, it is clear as a glass of ice water why Bush wants to phony up these job numbers before the elections. We're getting into the home stretch of the election season. But these pesky little White House reporters just won't leave it alone, because it again speaks to Bush's growing honesty and integrity problem. Isn't it ironic how they called Gore a liar? Yeah? And with this little rat bastard sending people off to die and blowing up cities, blowing up countries, his crappy lying military record, his lies about everything, and they called Gore a liar, the press corps. Oh my God. Anyway, this reporter says, Scott, just go back to this number, this 2.6 million jobs. This is a report not only was put out by the president's economists, but it was signed by the president of the United States. So obviously, Scott, he supported the concept of projecting 2.6 million jobs over the next 12 months. You still have not said that the president stands by that.
What we are going to do is continue to focus on the policy decisions that are being made here in Washington, D.C., and the policies the president is putting forward. This president has acted decisively to get our economy out of a recession that he inherited and get it growing strong. And it's growing stronger at this point. It is moving in the right direction. This is where the debate needs to be, is on the policy decisions that are being made here in Washington, D.C.
That's right. And damn you, reporter, for not asking the right questions and not answering the question at all. I don't answer questions. My job is to stand up here and talk like a jackass. That's what I do, and I do it real well. And if you don't like it, all you guys go piss off. I know you make more money than I do, but I don't care. I'm the press secretary. Someday I'll get my payoff. I'll get mine. Besides, my brain is all full of acid and schmuck and nastiness and poison and oatmeal. Fun little back and forth with a reporter about Bush's supposed honesty. Remember, Bush said he stands by every word he says. So the reporter says, Scott, there's a simple question, very important question, that will face voters this fall. The president repeatedly speaks to the fact that when he says something, you can take it to the bank. If the president then signs a report making a prediction, shouldn't voters hold him responsible and accountable for that prediction, in this case, 2.6 million jobs this year?
Those are forecasts made by economists at a specific point in time based on the data at that point. Productivity growth can affect those assumptions that are put into those economic forecasts. So different economists have different forecasts on the productivity growth. Some think it's going to be lower. Some think it's going to be higher. But productivity growth, it's important. It's important for, I mean, it's a good thing that productivity growth is high. But we also need to continue to strengthen the economy even more.
My question was his prediction is whether he should be held responsible for it.
I think we've been through this issue.
Yeah, we've been through this issue. You little jackass today on. You keep asking the wrong question. I've told you. I've told you over and over again. The forecasts are made by our economists at a specific point in time based on the data at that point. Productivity growth can affect those assumptions. So different economists have different forecasts of productivity growth. Something is going to be lower. Something is going to be higher. It's important. It's important. It's a good thing that productivity growth is high. But we also need to continue to strengthen our economy. I think we've been through this issue. But, Scott, the Bush bastard said 2.6 million jobs this year, Scott. 2.6 million, that's a very specific number, Scott. Isn't that, you know, the report that went up to Congress, 2.6 million jobs, Scott? Does the president stand by that? Well, the economic report is saying there's a number of policies that say, and besides, we're focusing on growth and everything that needs to be done. Quack, quack. It needs to be done in order for the president of the economic growth to report. And it says in there, it really says, because you never know, it's a snapshot. And we don't know what's going to happen because all of a sudden, all these reports were just economic nonsense. So the president do believe that he has to keep focusing on all this stuff that he has to do in order to do that. And you guys are asking the wrong question. I'll have you all shot. As soon as this press conference is over, you're all going to be murdered and your bodies cut up into a million little pieces and dumped into the Potomac. How's that, huh? How's that? So like it.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
Two environmental filmmakers strive to be fair, but objectivity is in the eye of the beholder. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Larry Hott and Diane Gary have been telling environmental stories through sound and pictures for 25 years. Hott says the documentary movie-making process constantly poses ethical choices.
There's a lot of rule bending that you can do when you make a film. You're starting with a selection process right from the beginning. What statements are going to go in? Who's going to end up on the editing room floor? What images are you going to use to illustrate your point of view? You can easily show, for example, a clear-cut forest. And on the screen, all you see is stumps. But you can leave out the perfectly beautifully managed forest on the edge of the screen.
Diane Gary says it takes conscious effort to keep a film from becoming one-sided.
One thing I think that we've done, and I would encourage anybody in the film world to do, is to not make anybody look like an idiot. If you film pro-timber harvest and anti-timber harvest people, try to make them look like equal adversaries. Then people can decide for themselves. I don't think we really convert anybody from one position to another, but I do think we add to the debate in an intelligent way.
Hott and Gary agree that a filmmaker is always choosing between what he or she wants to say and wants to leave out. Larry Hott.
People have this impression that because it's documentary, it's true. But it's as true as any story anybody has ever told anybody else. It's point of view and what you choose to keep in, what you choose to keep out. In the end, it's a matter of opinion.
Hott and Gary say there are always multiple points of view to any story, including their own. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of Brimstone Hill you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
So if you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued.
Two of them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Encourage people to invest in plant and equipment. That will help those who are the immediate employer, but also those who manufacture the plant, the equipment, or manufacture the or construct the plant will also have employment. And so it's a ripple effect in our economy. And
yeah, I got your ripple effect. That's Bush talking about economics. You see what I'm saying? He's such a dumbass. He's just such a dumbass. This economy has lost 3 million payroll jobs since this guy took office. The worst job creation record of any president since Herbert Hoover. Anybody listen to this program old enough to remember Herbert Hoover? When was that, Kathy? In the late 20s, early 30s? Jesus! Now, that forecast of 2.6 million new jobs this year was in the annual economic report of the president, a 412-page volume of charts and graphs and texts and all kinds of good stuff. According to, who's this according to? I never know who it's according to. Not that I give a damn, but I try, you know, I try. The White House, Terry Hunt, who's the White House, Associated Press White House correspondent. According to Terry, the forecast of 2.6 million new jobs this year came under special scrutiny after Treasury Secretary John Snow and Commerce Secretary Don Evans refused to repeat that optimistic prediction as they toured Washington and Oregon specifically to promote Bush's economic programs. When they were asked by members of the press, well, is it really 2.6? I think the economy's growing, and we have to make the tax cuts permanent because, you know, that top 2% of people who make money in this country, they're the ones that keep my worthless, uneducated ass in office. So, we got to keep... House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, President Bush is rapidly becoming the permanently surprised president. He is surprised that every economic prediction that he and his administration make doesn't happen. Rahm Emanuel, Democrat from Illinois, senior advisor back in the Clinton White House, said, quote, this president faces a credibility gap with his own economic team. This is why it is the employment gap for millions of American workers. And then, of course, McClellan saying people can debate numbers all they want. The president interested in the actual number of jobs being created. Well, let me tell you something, Scotty. You jackasses haven't created one job. You have destroyed 3 million jobs. Another interesting exchange. This is one of those back and forths. You got to listen close. Reporters are starting to get kind of testy here. Kind of like Scott. You know, what do you mean you're going to have us killed and dumped in the Potomac? What do you think we got planned for you, dude? That's the attitude you're getting here. Reporter says, "Why, if you're suggesting that people will debate the numbers, that's kind of a backhanded way, isn't it, Scott, to say, oh, who cares about the numbers, Scott, right? Well, apparently the president's top economic advisors care about the numbers, because that's why they wrote a very large report, Scott, and sent it to Congress. So why was the prediction of 2.6 million jobs this year made in the first place if Bush and you and his Treasury Secretary are going to backpedal away from it now?
behind?
No, I think what the president stands behind is the policies that he is implementing, the policies that he is advocating. That's what's important.
The number is the question.
No, but the president's concern is on the number of jobs being created, and the president's focus is on making sure that people are hurting because they cannot find work, have a job. That's where the president's focus is.
Why was the number predicted? You can't get away with not just answer the question.
I've been asked and I've answered.
No, you've not answered.
Go ahead.
Everybody watching knows you haven't answered.
I disagree.
See? Well, thank goodness some of the White House press corps is starting to, what's the word I'm looking for, Kathy? Starting to get a little feisty. Are they tired of being spoon-fed this crap? This is the same, basically the same press corps that did for candidate George Bush what Monica did for Bill Clinton over and over and over again. These are the people who are responsible, to a large extent, for putting this wasteful bastard in the White House, for putting this draft-dodging coward in the White House. These people, so if they're gaining a little bit of credibility, good for them. Read what? The last two sentences. Okay, and that last soundbite? Okay, the last two sentences. I've been asked this, and I've asked, I've been asked, and I've answered. And the reporter says, no, you have not answered. And everybody watching knows you haven't answered. And then Scotty says, I disagree. I thought everybody heard that, Kathy. All right, Scotty seems to lose it here. Listen up. Suggesting reporters are putting words in his mouth. Huh? some of that Bush crime family schizophrenia, paranoid schizophrenia is starting to seep into the chrome dome of this Scott McClellan creep. Reporter says, Scott, this president has had a number of issues come up over the last couple of weeks in which his credibility has been questioned. Medicare costs, the budget, Iraq, even from within your own party. So now you've put out a number that says your tax plan, your policies, will erase all job losses. It will create 2.6 million jobs. You erase all the losses from his first term by November? And now you say, well, maybe it will, maybe it won't. So what are we supposed to...
I don't think that's what I said, Bob. You're putting words in my mouth. I don't think that's what I said. I said that this is our annual economic report that is based on the economic modeling done by our economist. And it's based on that snapshot at that point in time, based on the data that is available at that point. But
you don't step behind that number.
No, some people are putting those words in my mouth. I said that this was the president's economic report that is put out every year.
But Scott, he signed it. Oh, that's right. This is the Enron president. Signing off on something doesn't mean a damn thing. No, what's going on here, Scott? You're just the little bitch that comes out and repeats all this stuff and takes the flack. You are Bill Clinton's bitch, and that's understandable. But what you and Snow and I'm sorry, not Bill Clinton's bitch, but that was Monica, but George Bush's bitch. You come out and you make your statements, but you and John Snow and Don Evans and George Bush and Dick Cheney, you all know what the truth is. The truth is you have lost this economy 3 million jobs. You're not going to produce any jobs net gain, not a one. You understand that. But you all also believe that we, the American people, are still stupid. We have been stupid for a long time here, Scott. But we're not as stupid today as we were when you and your thugs stole the presidency. But that's what you're banking on.
Oh, that's the American public. They're stupid. They won't remember. 2.6 million. Just toss it out there now. It won't matter.
Last one on this issue. Reporter says, Scott, the president's advisors have at various times made very specific predictions about the number of jobs that would be created by the policies that you are advocating right now, specifically the tax cuts. That has not happened, Scott. So how can you sell these tax cuts as creating jobs when, in fact, they haven't?
That's why the president put forward a six-point plan to create an even more robust environment for job creation. That's why he's called on Congress to pass comprehensive energy legislation. That's why he's called on Congress to address the rising cost of health care. That's why he's called on Congress to pass medical liability reform.
Oh,
that's why he's called on Congress to continue to act to promote free trade with a level playing field. So it'll create an even more robust environment for job creation when Congress acts on those measures.
Ah, I see. Blame Congress for the economic problems. You've got a Republican Congress, you jackass. It must be the new Rove Directive. If you can't blame Clinton, blame Congress. It's a Republican Congress, Scott. He's called on Congress. He's called on Congress. He's called on Congress. He's called on Congress. Well, Scott, do you think that'll create more jobs? Well, he's called on Congress. He's called on Congress. He's called on Congress. My God. Oh, yeah, Helen Thomas was there. How old is she? 83? Helen Thomas was there, and she had some questions today about Bush's military service, which Simple Scotty won't answer. Now, at one point in here, she says, so you don't really know? And then she says, it's a very simple question. And when she says it's a very simple question, that's when this prick, Scott McClellan, disrespects a woman old enough to be his great-grandmother and says, go ahead, John. Now, listen to this. First of all, Helen Thomas says, I want to revisit a question I asked you last week and you didn't have the answer. Maybe you've got it now, Scott. Did the president ever do community service while he was in the National Guard?
Yeah, no, Helen, you had said that this was relating to a rumor that you heard, and I think there's a difference between rumor-mongering and journalism, and so I'm just not going to dignify those kind of rumors from this podium. I think the records have been released, and you have all the information is available to you publicly. Hello, John.
I don't really know.
Yeah, no, I said that this was relating to some trashy rumors that are circulating out there, and I'm just not going to dignify them from this podium. Go ahead, John.
It's a very simple question. Go ahead, John. Screw you, old lady. Why is this old bitch in here anyway? Somebody get Helen Thomas out of here. I'm Scott McClellan. How dare this raghead old lady sit here and ask me a question about whether or not George Bush had to serve community service because he got busted for drug use in Texas? Get this woman out of here. Guards, have her killed. And tossed into the Potomac. Is this the last one? All right, here's the last one. This one's just a hoot about how Bush picks and chooses his scientific studies to fit his needs, just like he did with Iraq intelligence. Now listen to this. The reporter says, Scott, a group of prominent scientists, including some university presidents and Nobel laureates. Do you know what I mean by that, Scott? University presidents and Nobel laureates. The word laureate means they won prizes, okay? They signed a letter today, Scott, complaining that the Bush White House has systematically skewed science to fit its policy agendas. In particular, Scott, they accuse this administration of stacking federal advisory panels and suppressing EPA studies that don't agree with your policy objectives. Have you seen the letter, and can you respond?
No, I haven't, but I can assure you that this is an administration that makes decisions based on the best available science. And I would point to what we are doing in terms of the President's Clear Skies Initiative as a prime example. We've seen the success from the Acid Rain program of this market-based approach. And the President has put forward a Clear Skies Initiative to cut power plant emissions by 70%. And that's an initiative that is based on the best available science.
And I don't know. I've got to be careful here. I may only have, 7 more shows to do, but I want to be able to do them. I don't want to let loose with a stream of threatening obscenities that causes me to lose my job. But I listen to this stuff, and I just... I don't know. This is worse than anything Lewis Carroll ever imagined. This is worse than anything the Red Queen ever thought of. This is worse than anything that Alice ever experienced when she ate the magic mushrooms. He says, we've seen the success from the acid rain program of this market-based approach. Acid rain, to the extent that it has diminished over the past 25 years. And it's because of heavy-duty restrictions put in place and left in place, starting with, oh dear Christ, Richard Nixon. And left in place by, oh my God, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter and the brain-dead Ronald Reagan and Pappy Bush and Bill Clinton. So this bonehead stands there and says, well, we've seen the success from the acid rain program of this market-based approach. No, Scott, it was not a market-based approach that brought down some of the horrendous effects of acid rain. It was heavy-duty restrictions. It was forced reduction of emissions. And the president has put forward a Clear Skies initiative to cut power plant emissions by 70%. And I am such a liar. I will stand up here and say anything that I'm supposed to say because I am proud to be George Bush's whore. I will, his bitch, his whore, whatever you want to call me, I don't care. I don't care because when all this is over, I get to go have beers with real important people. And you press geeks, all you can do is go back to your tacky little TV stations. So, you know, I don't care. I don't care. They pay me to lie, and by God, I will lie. What's going to happen when the reporters bring up the charge by Larry Flint? It was in the Daily Telegraph of London and the New York Daily News that Flint says he has the names, all the information now about the abortion that Bush arranged for his girlfriend in the 1970s. Flint said, the story has to come out. There's a lot of hypocrisy in the White House about this whole abortion issue. I've talked to the woman's friends. I've tracked down the doctor who did the abortion. I tracked down the Bush people who arranged for the abortion. I've got the story nailed. Can you imagine Helen Thomas saying, well, Scott, there's some reports out there about George Bush and this abortion.
Any collective approach is one based upon sound science and not based upon science. Religiously, I'm speaking on the science, cause we gotta live on science alone. I tell you what, mathematically, I'm having it. I wanna live on science alone.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple. Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show, where we serve you food with attitude, plus a heaping helping of humor.
And a playful pinch of romance.
It's all about food, family, and fun.
We'll help you juggle kids, kitchen, career, health, and relationships with passion and commitment.
We cover everything from new product reviews and consumer information to quick, simple, and easy recipes just for the two of you.
Plus parenting tips and tricks.
Cooking advice to save time and money.
Nutrition news and health. Healthier living.
Entertainment options for the whole family.
And how to tag team manage kids, career, life, and relationships.
Plus, I'll tell you how to train your in-laws so they don't become outlaws.
So tune in every Sunday from 12 noon to 2 right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all 4 burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of you may be alarmed by subversive propaganda spread by that liberal media filter, Mike Malloy, who distorts the truth every weeknight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Rest assured, our sources at Fox News confirm that we have a fabulous, booming economy and enjoy daily glorious victories in the numerous fronts of the ongoing terror wars. And besides, any problems we're experiencing are all Clinton's fault. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Spin Free Radio, only with Mike Malloy.
5 before the hour, just about out of time here. Captain Mike is calling from Hollywood. You got about a minute, Mike.
Hey there, just real quickly, I just wanted to ask you, guess who the smartest man in America is?
The smartest man in America is whom?
Guess who's sitting back right now? He's probably listening to your show right now, Mike, and he's having a huge laugh.
John Kasich.
Ari Fleischer.
Ari Fleischer!
Did he get out in time or what?
Yeah, you almost miss him, don't you?
Yep, just wanted to say that.
This McClellan, what a little turkey. Thanks, Mike.
You betcha.
All right, sir. Appreciate your call. I guess for just a minute we can squeeze in our Omaha bureau chief. Hey, Dee.
Oh, hey. I just wanted to say that I'm going to say something very provocative here. Is that okay?
Sure.
I really think Bush absolutely hates us. He hates America, and that's why he's letting the middle class dwindle away. And I'll call another time to tell you some solutions that I think would work for creating jobs, but I'll call another time about that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, D.
Thanks a lot.
All right, sir. Appreciate it. Oh, my goodness. All right. Kay is calling from Santa Fe. Kay, you have about 30 seconds.
Yes. On Labor Day, before election time, all the unemployed people and all the wounded veterans that have come back from Iraq and all the parents who have lost children in Iraq should converge on the White House on Labor Day before election.
I'm all for it.
Let's do it.
All right, Kay, thanks. Appreciate your call. We have 7 programs left tomorrow and Friday, next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, unless they pull the plug on this show earlier. But we only have 7 shows left, so we'd like to hear from you. I'm not sure what we're going to do as we get closer and closer to the end, but Kathy will come up with something. Program produced here in Atlanta tonight by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman is our announcer. Mark Marshall is the webmaster at MikeMalloy.com. If you've not been there, go. There's all kinds of fun things to do. Go into the gallery if you want to see the video from Fox of two pasty-faced white boys, John Kasich and this cretin Hugh Hewitt, and moi. Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. I'll see you tomorrow night. I hope. I really hope. Take care. Just look.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2004.
To see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans.